All right. Hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Sorry we were slightly delayed for various reasons, and Darren the Man should be joining us later. So anyway, hello, everybody. Cheers. Cheers, everybody. Cheers, Paul. Cheers, Lipton. Cheers, Nimble Horse. Cheers, Resident Poet. Cheers, Green Fez 121. Cheers, everybody, and Salou and Slandra and Salou and Proust and Prost and K Piss and Hergen Gerligan and what else?
Yakidar, Scrubianan.
Yes, and Bottoms Up and
Nazrovia.
Saludo and whatever it is in the Romanian Salute or something, I forget what it is. And Slandrava. And welcome to the Jolly. I don't know what language that is. Welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We're, of course, on the public house. It's on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. in New York, which discuss interesting stuff in the news and based science and psychology and all kinds of malarkey. And so I hope you've had a stimulating and interesting week. And it's a skull. Yes, that's what I might have forgotten. Skull, Gary Stein, 9536. Skull. You'll notice that I've created some new moderators. That is because we were subject last week to people continually writing a particular letter, L for Liron, the hope not hate paedophile whom they were defending. So
Ed, was it true that our Spanish moderator, who we did have, went on a siesta?
I did. I mean, Carlotta, our dear Spanish barmaid Carlotta, is a key today, but I don't know whether she was here last week. Because I was continually pressing delete. And frustratingly, you can't create moderators when you're actually doing the program. You have to go, it's a very complicated and gay process where I had to go into the YouTube thing. And then there was a friend of mine who wanted to make moderator and they wouldn't let him. And oh God, it was, but anyway, it's okay now. Resident Poet is now moderator. Tommy M is now moderator. Nimble Horse is now moderator. Carlos Puig is now moderator, and a load of other people that seem to have dropped off are moderators. But anyway, so everyone's now fine. Good. So cheers. So, guys, we're going to look today at a number of things. We're going to look, we're going to wait hopefully till when Darren comes on to look at the psychology of this woman in Minnesota. There's, of course, what's going on in Iran. There's people being arrested for feeding pigeons. But what I'm particularly interested in, and what Paul drew my attention to this morning, it's not just wheelchair Barbie anymore. It's not just fat Barbie. It's autistic Barbie. Mattel, I remember when I was a kid, my mum would drop me off at the house of a girl at my school called Lisa Burden, and she had Barbies because she was a girl. And we had great fun. I don't know if you had a similar experience, Paul, with a female friend at primary school or something.
No, but I had an old Staffordshire Bull Terrier called Barbie.
Old Staffordshire Bull Terrier will do, although presumably your Staffordshire Bull Terrier actually had genitals rather than just a sort of bit of plastic, which covered up where they should be. And so, Paul, why is this a turning point in civilization to have a Mattel autistic Barbie? Why did it perk your interest?
Well, not being part of the TISM nation, am I the best person to ask?
Well, you were fascinated by it. You sent me the link. You said this is your next birthday and Christmas present sorted. You were, you know. So I think
apart from the eyes not making contact, what other features did it have? Because I didn't look that closely.
Oh, so yeah, it's so first she has earphones because she has a problem with noise.
That's your average adolescent. So yeah.
Yeah, but she has such a problem with noise that she has to wear the earphones. I'm trying to find a close-up picture. She has earphones. She has she's holding some sort of, I don't know, like Sudoku or something to keep her occupied. I think it was a Guardian link you sent me, and it was the best picture. Yeah. Let's see if I can find it in the Guardian. Okay, yeah, Mattel launches Autism Barbie. So,
but let me get this straight: the new autistic Barbie doesn't meet your eyes, is antisocial, has earphones to block off reality. I'm still not seeing how
she coordinates her colouring. So first of all, she's got a mauve and white striped dress, and then the colouring is similar. So then she's got a pink earmuffs and a pink sort of, I don't know what it is, like an iPad, I think it is, that she holds that's got letters on it because she's doing some sort of letter. Like crosswords or you know, some autistic thing like that, like a word search or something. And then she's holding a pink flower in one of her hands. I also know, and I can't believe this, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, chaps. Tell them what you think. She looked frankly anorexic. And I know, that autism in women crosses over with borderline personality disorder, self-harm, anorexia, that whole nexus there. She's really, really skinny. She's surely skinnier than most Barbies I've seen. She's certainly skinnier than Fat Barbie.
I haven't seen Fat Barbie.
No, there is. Well, she's there, but she's not that fat. But she's this sort of chubby Barbie.
Yes, it has been talking for quite some time now about her dolly.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, I read Woke Eugenics. It's an excellent read.
That's good. The reason why Ed and Paul were talking about it was because we're trying to stay on topic, Gibson. And the topic that we decided before the show for a while, you know, for like in a sort of Lotus Eaters analytical kind of way, was actually autistic Barbie. And so, if you don't mind, I'll just finish what I was talking about.
I love the way Ed, he doesn't even pretend to listen to you.
I just like it's like whatever. Like I'm Nipton. I want to talk now. Shut up. Stop talking. I'm talking. Yes, that's Nepalese accent. Yes, which Lipton does have. Okay, hang on. Look, let me just try. Let me just try and keep on topic just for a little bit. She also has coordinated. I know she's coordinated her shoes with her dress as well, so everything's coordinated. She's unnaturally thin, that's about it. So that's how they're represented. And she doesn't. And there seems to be a facility to allow her to not make eye contact. So in one of the pictures, she's not making eye contact, and one of them is. And there's a little girl who... Oh, she has a fidget spinner. That's what it is. I'm sorry. It's not a flower in her right hand. It's a fidget spinner. She has a fidget spinner. So there you go. So that apparently is autistic. So
is a fidget spinner a euphemism for a sex toy?
I thought so. But did you not remember fidget spinners, Paul? They were very popular about 10 years ago, or a bit more than 10 years ago.
No.
It was in Finland. They pronounce them wicker spinners for some reason because they can't hear spit, whatever, properly. But they say wicker spinner, and there's probably loads of them around the house, just in nooks and crannies and in corners. They were so popular. My kids loved them. Everybody loved them, and they swept through the society. A toy shop owner said to me, "He'd never seen anything like it in his whole toy shop owning career. He'd never see anything like it." And then boom, then they were off again. Nobody cared. So that's autistic Barbie, chaps. So if anyone has a little girl, then buy her. Anyway, Lipton, you were going to tell me how great I was.
Yes, the book is great. There is a section in the book about our growing preference for the ugly and people with various defects and disabilities. Autism is a developmental disability. Some autistic people are smart, high-functioning artists. Those people used to be called... It was once called Asperger syndrome. No, we just say autism. But nobody really wants to have autism. Nobody really wants to be obese. And you can't really look at a doll and tell that it is autistic. Some people, based on their personality patterns, you may infer that they are suffering from autism. But it's not easy to look at somebody and see that the person is autistic. And isn't Barbie getting a bit old-fashioned? Look, Barbie is beautiful. She should be the epitome of beauty and sexiness. And autism in females isn't particularly sexy because autistic people are overly masculine.
Lipton, that makes no sense. Your female aesthetic is based on Anne Widdecombe, and yet you're finding Barbie attractive. This makes no... There's no consistency.
But Widdecombe isn't masculine. Physically, she isn't physically masculine.
She's not amazingly... I suppose she's feminine in the sense that she has enormous breasts.
Imagine if they made Anne Widdecombe Barbie dolls, the raw material costs would shoot up.
Well, that's why there was that TV program about 25 years ago or something called, Idol or something like that, right? And there was this Scottish girl in it called Michelle. And the public kept, she was very, very fat. And the public kept voting for Michelle to stay in because all these women that were a bit fat, you know, identify with her or whatever. She was quite good at singing, but to be fair, there was no way there was going to be a pop career, was there, out of an obese Glaswegian girl. It's just not going to happen. And did you remember this? Michelle McManus, that's it, Jay Granwell. Michelle McManus, that was her name.
I thought that was a wrestler in the 80s, McManus.
Yeah, well, no, that was something else, McManus. But maybe they're related. Maybe it was his daughter. But yeah. Anyway, that must be it. But the point is that inherited the bill and all that kind of thing. But they kept voting her in. They kept voting her in every single week. Mick McManus fathered Michelle McManus, and they're vaguely related to Vince McMahon and other. You know, Vince McMahon's wife follows me on Twitter, by the way. Yeah, but they had these dolls, you see, that went with the series. I forget if it was Idols or Pop Stars or something it was called. I forget what it was. I think it was called Idols. And, of course, they had to get her off eventually because they couldn't make the dolls, could they? I mean, the dolls were kind of preset to a certain size, and they'd have to have a whole new doll template for Michelle McManus. So eventually they somehow tweaked it. They somehow rigged it so that she couldn't get into the final group where you get the dolls, because it just wouldn't have worked. But yes, so what else did you love about my brilliant book, Woke Eugenics, Lipton?
I particularly enjoyed the section discussing how the Industrial Revolution increased the reproductive rate of people who suffered from various defects. Before the Industrial Revolution, those people, they would have died.
This is correct, yes.
And welfare, people on welfare in the UK, they are replacing themselves.
They are the only, and not just people that are on welfare, but also people that are look, I want to stick with the program, Lipton. I've got to stick with the program for my own. You know why? So I want to move on to the next thing. Now that we've discussed the autistic Barbie, and that is a woman being arrested for feeding pigeons in a park in Harrow.
I saw it.
Arrested, like she. First of all, the first step. Again, as a person who's been away from England for a very long time, doesn't interact with it every day. You know, there's a new thing in town. I was aware when I left of like community support officers. That are effectively these kind of non-policemen. A community support officer.
Ed. That's factually wrong. Currently, to be a fully employed police officer, you are by definition a non-policeman. Or policewoman, because they do absolutely nothing. So a community support officer is someone who supports the police doing nothing.
Yes, but the police at least have useful things like powers of arrest, and can actually do something. Whereas what we have with the moment with these
sorry to interrupt you again, Ed, but they only arrest you if you've made a nasty tweet. If you're mugging someone or assaulting someone, they walk the other way.
This is correct, yes. And indeed, as we saw with that very short Asian-looking lady, they are literally placed in a situation where if a man who is quite big gets angry with them, then they have to run away and rely on kindly members of the public to rescue them, despite the fact that they are supposed to be enforcing the law. And I noticed what happened, apparently, it's not even community support officers now. There's now a step down from that. And they're called something like, is it community wardens? I don't know what it is. It's like traffic wardens, but they're concerned with things like litter, essentially, from what I can work out. It's not even community support officers. It's some other thing, and they just wander about, looking to intimidate members of the public that are simply going about their business being English.
To be fair, Ed, I do that quite a bit, but I don't have a uniform and I'm not paid.
That's a good point. Yeah, but that was what we. But that's what you used to have, though. You used to have members of the public that would do exactly that. That would wander around and assert themselves and make clear to people that you can't do that. Oi, pack it in. Like go up to kids that are misbehaving and give them a clip round the ear. And that was fine. Go up to kids that were like in comics, like in the Beano in the 50s.
My bête noire had a weekend wankers. I live in the countryside and. They just come out like cockroaches from the floorboards every weekend.
Paul, explain the meaning of that word. What do you hear?
Weekend. It's Saturday and Sunday.
No, not weekend, the bête noire. Not some people don't know the meaning of the word.
Bête noire. It's the thing that pisses you off. The black beast, literally.
A beast?
Bet is a beast, isn't it? Noir is black. It could be Lipton pseudonym.
I didn't know. But anyway, the point is, eating swans is okay, exactly. But this woman was feeding pigeons, and this community, whatever person, came over and said, you've got to pay a fine because you're feeding pigeons. And she said, no, bollocks, I'll feed pigeons if I want to. So this woman rang the police, and this community person, support community officer, whatever the hell she is, and the woman couldn't believe it could be illegal to feed the pigeons. It was incomprehensible to her that this could possibly be happening. She refused to do what she was told. And there's now an image of this poor woman being arrested by two police officers who, of course, are extremely short women.
Fact. Okay, they're not fact.
And
but Ed,
no, have you got the picture?
Ed, direct question. Do you think being arrested for feeding pigeons is any better or worse than being arrested for standing 100 yards from an abortion clinic silently praying?
No, let's talk about this. This is, I forget the woman's name. There's some woman with a dull-barreled name. I think I mention her actually in Work Eugenics, don't I, Lipton? I do mention her.
Yes, the lady was praying.
And this has happened to her a number of times. And this is an amazing story. I'm not aware.
But she didn't go to prison, though. She didn't go to prison.
They just arrested her. It's lost on nobody. I suppose it's the idea that it is. I was corresponding with a chap earlier today about the way that the legal system works, and he was saying that this was in relation to a case of a divorce and who gets the child and whatever, and what he was thinking was, well, surely that should be about the child, shouldn't it? It should be child centric. It should be, what is the good thing for the child in terms of its upbringing, in terms of what is going to help it the most? That's what should be important. And so if there's issues, like if, for example, there's evidence of abuse by one parent, then surely, you know, you should report these and go to a social worker and raise these and whatever, right? Isn't that logical? Yeah, the child might be at risk. No, that's not what you do. That's considered terribly bad form. That's considered like interfering with the case or whatever. Malicious. So no, it's in the interests of the system carrying out its own rules, and those rules are that in these circumstances where there is a parental dispute over custody, you do this and you do this and you do this and you do this. And so if you break those rules, let's say for example it is quite clear to you that your ex-husband, let's say, has been abusive to the child, and the child desperately doesn't want to go and spend the pursuant week or whatever, half a week, with the ex-husband. No, you send the child away crying. You do that because that's the rules. And the judges take a very dim view of those rules being broken. And that gets us to this thing. What are the rules? The rules are...
Well, except, yeah. Ed, the slight... I totally agree with you, except you also have scenarios whereby that is true to the nth degree, but then if they arbitrarily decide the rules don't matter, suddenly the goalposts shift completely. So that they're not even consistent under their own ridiculous rules.
This is true. And this was another thing, actually, that my correspondent was discussing with me, that the lawyers would say things like, oh, this judge, yeah, he doesn't really read the case notes. He doesn't really read them. So, you know, we're going to have to really argue our case because he doesn't really read them. He doesn't do his job properly. And then somebody else, some other judge, oh, this judge is actually a reader. He reads the case, but he gets in moods. He's very grumpy and he'll make his mind up. And then that's that. There's no persuading him. And so there's this terrible arbitrariness in cases. That's the thing with regard also to what David Lammy is suggesting about limiting jury trials. Imagine the effect that would have to have a grumpy judge. What that would to have a judge that just and that he decides whether not what your sentence is, but whether you're innocent or guilty. That's extremely dangerous. And that's where we get to. Judges are arbiters of, as you say, there's the rules, but there's this tension in law between whether it's, what's it, analytic or idealistic, essentially. There's that tension in law, like that idea that you shouldn't benefit from your own crime.
I agree with what you're saying, but there's an extra level. So that woman who was charged with silently praying, they dropped the case initially because it's ridiculous. She was paid compensation by the police, and subsequently the same police force has charged her on a separate incident of doing the same thing. So even when they've gone through all the hoops and proven themselves to be not following their own rules, they then recharge her under the same rubric.
Yes, by the way, it now seems Darren won't be joining us, so we'll just carry on. Yes, but right, but the thing is, the question is, what are they charging her with? They're charging her. She's standing by an abortion clinic, legal, right? But if she's praying, that counts as a pro in silence in her head. That counts as a protest, illegal, because they have an exclusion zone because they feel that the carrying out your democratic right to express your opinion, which is intimidating and upsetting to women that want to have abortions.
The mentally unstable women.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think that I would say that the kind of woman that wants to have an abortion. Yeah, I'm sorry to be horrible about this. I'm sure there are people out there that are alive because their crazy mother has thought about having an abortion and then didn't, and it's, you know, it's very terrible. I don't know. What do you think, Lipton? Do you think that they should? I mean, encouraging them?
No, I have been pronouncing this argument for quite some time now. Abortion is the problem of a careless woman. On average, the women who have abortions are working-class women who think that they lack an option. Most victims of rape and incest do not have abortions. Why do women have abortions? Because of unplanned pregnancies. It's not about female empowerment. It's about selfishness and narcissism.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what the data indicates. That it is
exactly.
Yeah, they are elevated.
People are not from these studies are quite global, even in the Caribbean. People are not having abortions because of rape or incest. They're having abortions because of unplanned pregnancy. They are women who slept with irresponsible men and they don't want to have children with those men. End of story.
Of course, what you're overlooking is it's perfectly reasonable to choose a termination if it happens to be the wrong gender, even though, as we've established, gender is a completely fluid concept. But just in case the genderless baby turns out to be the gender you don't want, even though gender is fluid, it's perfectly okay to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Brilliant point.
This is a good point. Yeah, this is. I hadn't thought of that level of hypocrisy. That's true. In much the same way that they say, there's no such thing as race. Race is a social construct. But we need to have more black organ donors.
No, but what do you know? What's funny?
Sorry.
Do you know what's really funny?
What?
If race is a social construct, it is malleable. And therefore, a black woman can identify as a white woman because race is a social construct. Transracialism is more legitimate than the trans movement.
Oh, it is. I mean, there was that case, wasn't there? Rachel Dolezal, her name
yes.
was.
Yes.
Yeah, but there was a brilliant, you know, I've mentioned this before, I think, but you know that Ed puppet, Ed Asks America on YouTube, he went to Howard University, the black college in the States, and he asked a load of black college students, do you believe a man can be a woman? And he asked them a load of trans questions. And without, you know, every single one of them, because they're the right demographic, said that, of course, anyone can be any gender. The minute he asked them, do you think a white person can identify as black? Every single student said, of course not. That's offensive.
I had the same thing when I was in California and I interviewed these students and they said at the University of California at Berkeley. And they said exactly the same thing. Well, no, so a man can be one. Yeah, sure. What about identifying race? Oh, that's a whole different thing. What did they teach us? Race was a social construct, they said. I was like, yeah, it is. Right. So surely, if it's a social construct, it doesn't mean anything. Then what's the problem? But it is amazing. Yeah, the idea that you can say that gender is a social construct. And even though there's been a lot of kickback against that, there's still serious people that insist that's true. But yet you can't have sex-based abortion. It's amazing.
Yes, but you can now.
But it's immoral.
In the UK, they're decriminalising it.
Are they?
Well, this is one of the things. One of the advisory councils said it was stigmatising if anybody mentioned that the vast majority of gender-selected abortions happen to be from a certain sector of the community.
Right, but why is that leading to them decriminalising it?
So, they don't... whereas doctors have always, the advice has been, you're not allowed to grant an abortion on the basis of gender, they're now looking the other way.
And also, I mean, I don't mean to, but presumably there's a degree to which the medical profession itself has quite a few people of the kind of community that might engage in sex-selective abortion.
Well, there's anecdotal stories whereby the doctor will put, after the scan, will put a pen in one pocket or the other, depending on the gender of the child.
Really?
Yeah. So then they're not verbally saying. So then the parents can decide.
Right. And they don't have to have any reason to have an abortion. They can just
that's you just need two cooperative doctors.
It's an extraordinary thing because normally, even with animals, a vet will not put down a healthy animal. You can't take a healthy animal to a vet and say, can you destroy this animal?
Yeah, but there was one particular week. I think we've talked about it briefly in a previous week, but one particular week in the UK Parliament, it was the assisted suicide bill and the late term, basically up to full term abortion. It was, they introduced it as without being in the manifesto, and it was, they just introduced it all of a sudden. And there was about 2 hours discussion. It was a complete... And I think it's going to the House of Lords, and if they don't reject it, it's going to be an absolute tragedy. So effectively, the mad logic was, if a woman is upset and she chooses to have a up-to-birth abortion, it would be completely wrong to call her a criminal. Therefore, you have to decriminalise the act itself. That's the logic. Or lack of,
right. I can see the logic. The logic is that the feelings that she'd feel about being called a criminal for what she's done would be so unpleasant that she shouldn't have to feel those feelings, and therefore the thing itself. This is very interesting. That the thing itself should not be a crime. Because of her almost, how can we put it, almost like allergic reaction to her phobia at being labelled in that way.
Well, did you see the American, you know, that series whereby someone sits in the middle and there's all these people surrounding them and they have to race to the front to have a debate with them? I forgot what it's called, but it's on YouTube. It's based in America. Is it Jubilee?
Jubilee. Yes.
And there was a anti-abortion campaigner and a lady was discussing and then admitted to having had an abortion. And the anti-abortion lady said, it's really sad that you had to do this. And I wish your child and you had better support at the time. And the lady who'd had the abortion started screaming at her, don't you use my child's for your argument. And I'm thinking, so you could have it torn apart in the womb, but somebody else can't even mention it because that's outrageous. It's the hypersensitivity to absolutely deranged levels is ridiculous.
If you're dealing with people that have, I mean, I hate to, it's very, you know, our friendly, but these kinds of borderline personality traits. Then they feel feelings very strongly. They're triggered very easily, and if they're like a bit, you know, let's just say narcissistic in a posh Scouse accent, but I can't do that. But you know what I mean. They, you know, sort of Paul McCartney accent. Then they can't cope with the feelings. There was a case in some British university, some quite good one. I forget, it was in Bristol. Of these women that went absolutely crazy because an anti-abortion society was set up at their university. which is within the rules of their. I think I mentioned that in Work Eugenics as well.
Was it Manchester University?
I think it was Manchester, yeah. And the idea of them having on campus, of their existing on camp on their campus, which is anyway at the University of Manchester, like Oxford, Cambridge, or Durham, it's like colleges. Yeah, it's like people living all over the place in this town, living on Oxford Road and whatever. A society that disagrees with their opinions. They found that so triggering. They said that it makes them feel, the girl that was in charge of the campaign, literally unsafe. And I find that really interesting, that idea of unsafe. Like, what does safe mean? As far as I'm concerned, safe means physical safety. I'm safe, right? Things have happened today that have annoyed me, or, you know, have been slight setbacks, right? Okay, Darren having to cancel, for very good reason, by the way, is a setback. Or, I don't know, I was slightly...
Sorry, Ed, sorry to interrupt. Has his prolapse come back?
Yes, that must be it. Yes, okay. He's okay.
Sorry,
that's okay.
What you told me off camera, so
I'm
just assuming.
So
you've got an image now, haven't you?
So,
Darren's prolapse.
This won't go away. But it's rather triggering me that it won't go away. It would be good.
Do you feel safe now?
I feel safe. Like, I'm safe. I don't like the power that your words have over me. That's how they feel, I think. That's how they feel. The idea that if someone says something to you which makes you in a certain state of mind, then if you're unstable, your heart's beating faster, your adrenaline is going up, and your blood pressure is increased, and you literally feel that you might die, and I think that's how they feel. That's what they're trying to articulate.
Can we segue into the Rebecca? Is it Rebecca? But the good woman.
That is germane to this.
It is.
So. One of the things that I found the most... I'm going to write an article.
Is anyone in the chat playing Jermaine Bingo? Because it's Ed's favourite word.
It is. Really, it is. Feel free to... Jermaine Bingo and Aver Bingo. Those are Aver particularly. I just can't get enough of it. I realise when I write books, I know I have this problem with the word Aver, that I just use it. It just comes out. And so I even went through that manuscript of the Jonathan Bowden biography and word search aver and deleted every second example of it, and even that wasn't good enough, and my friend Nick Dixon noticed there was just too many avers.
I put the word peristaltic in my PhD just for the hell of it. It had no relevance whatsoever, but I love the word peristaltic.
I don't know, what does it mean?
It's the movement your intestines make.
Yeah.
Like the slug-like movement as they process.
What was your PhD thesis on, Paul?
Computer hackers. It was a stretch, let's put it that way. It was an intestinal stretch.
And did that become a book?
Yeah, it was eventually, yeah. Hackers, Crime in the Digital Sublime.
Yeah, it's weird looking back on your PhD thesis, isn't it, years later, and seeing how bad it is.
Yeah, it's not a very good book title for someone with a Liverpool accent, though. Hackers?
Crime and is a sublime? No, I suppose not. No. What's your PhD thesis? What was your PhD thesis on Lipton?
Oh, my MSc thesis, which was on Indian indentureship, entrepreneurship, and social mobility in Trinidad.
Why Trinidad?
Why Trinidad? I was doing a course on labor, and the course covered Indian indentureship, and at the same time I was studying entrepreneurship, and I became interested in the Brahmin caste in India, so I decided to write a thesis on Indian entrepreneurship. It's interesting that the Brahmins, when they were in Trinidad, the planters did not like to employ those Indians because they were elitist, and they assumed that they were superior to plantation work. But over time, those people, they became the entrepreneurs, they built shops, they could rely on their social capital. And by the late 20th century, Indians of the Brahmin caste, or their descendants rather, were out earning other Indians. And other Indians had an advantage because they were more productive as plantation laborers. They preferred to work in the plantation, so planters preferred more.
Minnesota rice.
Why haven't we had any super chats yet? Send some in. Secondly, in answer to your question, a PhD takes 3 years normally.
Well, technically, but not many. Well, in my day and your day, not many people did it in 3 years because that would involve losing a year's drinking.
It was 3 years. I had 3 years. It was 3 years. Yeah.
Oh, it took me four.
It took me three.
But I drank for one of those years, Ed. You were obviously abstemious and a little swat.
Well, no, but I had funding from the British Academy for a set.
I did loads of tutorials. It was brilliant. £18 an hour in the late 80s.
Oh, that's outrageous, because that didn't go up. That's what we were getting when I did tutorials.
Exactly. When I was a PhD student, that's the most disposable income I've had in my life.
It didn't go up. But that's what we were getting. We were literally the same.
No, and I was teaching 18 hours a week. I did economics tutorials and politics tutorials.
I thought it was an appallingly low amount of money, considering that we were all like qualified people. And I didn't know that.
I almost bought myself a fur coat and a cane. It was honestly, it was the best year or 2 years of tutoring. It was amazing.
That's outrageous. I taught about four courses, as I recall. We've gone off topic severely.
Minnesota.
Minnesota.
The Somalis, they're the least likable people in the States now.
I just can't believe that this has been allowed to happen. I mean, it's extraordinary. I mean, it's outrageous. I've always quite liked the Somalis that I've met personally, I have to say. And I have a taxi driver.
Do you know why? There was an article in Compact magazine, Ed, I'll send it on to you. But she was basically arguing that Somalis are incredibly ungrateful. No colonial empire has ever managed to control them. When people send back money to Somalia, they don't get any thanks because it's just assumed that they will. And they're in Africa, they're viewed as a really, really odd country.
Yes, this is my understanding. I have a friend a guy I know from Somaliland. So not Somalia, Somaliland. That's the functioning state bit in the north. And he refers to them as the Jews of Africa, which is true in so much as they do speak a language that's so similar to Hebrew that if you know a bit of Hebrew, you can kind of get the gist of it. And it's true in so much as, well, I don't know how else, but they don't, apparently they don't even say thank you very much.
Yeah, they don't say please or thank you, and they lack. I think you could be president of Somalia, Ed, because they lack all empathy.
I just found it weird when I went to one of their restaurants with some based friends of mine that they served rice and pasta on the same big plate with a load of lamb and a banana. It's very strange food. You get a banana, you get a knife at a Somali restaurant, you get a knife and a fork and a banana next.
Are you sure it was a banana, not a plantain?
It was big. It was banana. It was definitely a banana. I don't like bananas. I'm not a banana.
Do you think it was code? Were you the only person who was given one?
No, we all had bananas. Indeed, we had the waiter take a group photograph of us all holding a banana.
So, I think that is code.
There was me, there was Callum, the campaigner out of, you know, from Epping. There was Nina Power. There was, who else was there that you might have heard of? Various, there was Amy Gallagher. There was various based people that turned up. And we thoroughly, I can't name all of them because some of them were those kind of undercover people. You know what I mean? But we had a bloody good time. We enjoyed ourselves at the Somali restaurant.
I'm sure you did. I'm sure the bananas found good homes.
They did. They were in our tummy. And then there was some peristaltic activity. and they found different homes, new homes. And so in the North Sea. Right, we're about halfway through. So for those of you that are new, hello, hello, hello. We're going to go on to this woman, Renee, in the second half. Hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are online public house. It's on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time. 2 p.m. New York. We discuss what's going on in the news from the kind of faith, science, psychology, I don't know really what. It's quite eclectic, really, perspective. And so if you are new, could you, hello, French Toast, could you please, please, please subscribe? Could you subscribe on YouTube? And could you subscribe on my Substack? That's jollyheretic.com. I will read one of Benny's poems. That's a brilliant idea. On my Substack, that's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based stuff, stuff I can't put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, films I make. And where if you like what I do, you can support me for the cost of a pint of beer a month. And I've also set up a Telegram group which you can join, which is going very well, and we have very, very interesting discussions. I think it was called Fetal Pig. Rene, good Fetal Pig. It's an award-winning poem. Come on, where is it? Yeah, no. Where? Come on. Anyway, yes, on learning to dissect fetal pigs. No. Hell. Sorry, yeah, I have found it. Okay, good. So, subscribe there. Right, next to me we have Mr. Lipton Matthews. He is on here regularly. He has very interesting opinions, and he's black. So please subscribe to his channel. That is Lipton Matthews, where he gets all kinds of interesting people on, because he has black privilege. Charles Murray, Jesus, whatever. So please subscribe. over. I bet if Jesus was alive and you asked him for an interview, he'd say, "No, Ed, I can't call your channel because you know it's a bit out there, it's a bit controversial." But Lipton, I'll go. That's absolutely fine. And next, Lipton, we have Minnesota Daycare Limited. This is Dr. Paul Taylor. He has a PhD in childcare from the University of Minnesota at St. Paul, and he has set up a Somali daycare center. So please, if you have any children, put them there. And they will be traumatized. So subscribe to Paul's channel, and that is Readers of the Lost Art. And also, he's written various books which you should buy, as have I, and you should buy those
Can
books
I just
as well.
Ask, it's Readers of the Lost Art. You didn't enunciate very well, Ed. But also, I can't break. I've got just under 6,000, and I can't break 6,000. So I'm pleading like a sad little failed influencer. I want to get over 6,000.
Please go and subscribe now. Look, there's 1,400 of you watching, 1,500 of you watching this. Please go and subscribe to Paul's channel, right? Paul, Readers of the Lost Art. It costs you nothing. It's just a second. Yes, it feels like it means that you're Paul's bitch and he's your daddy. You know, yes, there's that. I appreciate there's that problem, and it may bring in certain sexual things that happened to you when you were a child, but putting that aside, you know, yes, you're basically helping Jerry Adams, Rolf Harris, Harold Shipman. You know, I see your point, but just go and subscribe over there so you can get to 6,000 and then eventually 10,000. I mean, you know, who knows? Yeah, the sky's the limit. It took absolutely ages. I remember it. When I did this, when I started the Jolly Heretic with Michael Woodley, and getting over 1,000, that was the thing you had to do, because then you can monetize and you can do all kinds of things if you have over 1,000. That's the big thing, over 1,000. And then if you get over 100,000, you get a little plaque. You get a little silver plaque, well, not silver, whatever it is, metal silver color plaque. It's worth doing. So,
Ed, compared to the birth of your children, how meaningful was getting the plaque? If your children being born was about a 5 or a 6, was the plaque like a 9 or a 10?
Yes, the plaque was high, because I didn't think they'd even give me one. I thought I was too beige. I thought you have to be a YouTuber in good standing. So my understanding is that if you've had a strike in the preceding 6 months, they won't give you the plaque. So even if you get your 100,000, if you've had a plight, a strike in the preceding 6 months, you've got to wait 6 months and be a good boy. And so they take it very seriously. What are you doing, Lipton? Is your Thai food arrived?
That's what my computer was frozen for a minute. I was still able to listen to both of you speak, but I'm not able to see myself now.
Well, we can't see you either. We're just seeing a black
box. I don't know why. My camera is on.
We're just seeing a black thing. There's no difference.
Yeah, my camera
is on. It's just a purer version of you. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I honestly can't see a difference. It's fine. Right, now, let's move on then. Paul. So, this woman.
So I've just got this horrible idea that the light's going to go back on. We're going to see Lipton, what we've always suspected he does under the blanket, but we'll actually see it. Because he'll forget the image is back on.
Read the poem. Oh, God, yeah. I'm so sorry, Carl Otter. Yes, of course. We have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, my good friend, who I haven't seen for ages, Mr. Quinn. And the poem is... right, okay, there's a problem with WhatsApp. Hang on a minute. The poem is, click, go on, Mr. Quinn. How are we going? This is Heidi Jermaine, Heidi Velland, sorry. Okay, it's all kicking off in the hood. The latest involves a Miss Good. She trifled with ICE and paid a high price, but some claim she's misunderstood. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn.
Hey.
And if you like Mr. Quinn's poetry, which you should, then please go over to his channel. He has a channel on YouTube and subscribe, a Jolly Heretic Poet, and subscribe and buy his book of Jolly Heretic Poetry, which is available on the old Amazon. Could you come back, please? It looks a bit weird to have a sort of...
No, it's my computer is causing the problem. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I know. All right. It's yeah, okay. Well, have you got a photo of yourself that you could put in that? Well, I know it's fine. Just put the little thing in the middle of the screen. We'll come out and walk back and cheers. Cheers and cheers and slander and slander va. I didn't know you were there. Okay. Every week we get attacked by Antifa. Last week it was L. This week it's Lipton's computer. And I don't know what's gonna happen next week. Who knows?
Honestly, the image is going to come back and it's Lipton and his Thai lady. There's going to be some horrible image that will traumatize us for life.
It's going to be like in the current edition of Love is Blind Germany.
I just think I heard her giggling under the blanket. We know she's there, Lipton.
Yeah, isn't she? Ting Tong is there, Lipton. She's there. And there's the sticky rice.
At least there'll be one happy ending in this programme.
As she calls it, sticky rice. Hello from Southport. Hello, Fresh Toast. You're in Southport. How are you doing? Right. Now, I just think this woman's crazy. And I think this was almost like borderline personality death by suicide. Because I cannot believe, or Paul, like, don't they, is life so fundamentally unserious for people born? She's not even that young. In 1988, she's only 8 years younger than me. Is life so unserious that you don't think that when there's a police officer with a gun, or ICE officer, whatever they are, with a gun, you probably shouldn't use your car as a weapon? And she clearly did.
She didn't, yeah, but I'm, believe it or not, I'm a bit conflicted because I actually think the officer overreacted. But having said that, I would caveat it massively. So, for example... Given, I believe, 6 months earlier, he'd been dragged 100 yards. I've seen the footage in a separate incident. So he's going to be hypersensitive to anything like a car being driven at him. I don't think he would have been harmed, but hindsight's a perfect science. It's easy for us to sit here in a comfortable room. But I just think, by British standards, I think he was a bit... He acted, you know, without an awful... He was a bit trigger happy, but again, just to emphasize, that's with a lot of caveats because it's easy looking from the sidelines. But I also think this was inevitable. It was always going to happen because the ICE officers have been insulted, spat at. They've been, you know, subject to a load of stress by these hooligans. And guess what? Tempers are going to fray. And the idea that, like you say, you put yourself in a situation where there are a load of men with guns being threatened by a load of people, you're in a car, you drive at them. How is this, you know, even if it only happens one out of 100 times, there's going to be one unhappy ending. And it's what Lipton and I talk about every single week, this failure to understand that life has consequences.
So this lady, it's unfortunate that she's dead, but she was a part of a group that was invested in combating ICE. Why would you want to challenge an agency that was granted legal authority to get rid of illegals?
There seems to be, again, we're under attack, chaps. Lipton, I don't know if you're there.
I can hear you. I'm here.
So she was part of a group that were what they called legal observers, wasn't she?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the name of the group, but that group was devoted to challenging ICE. So they were devoted to challenging ICE and de-arresting illegals. So ICE has a mandate, and you were in direct competition with the mandate of ICE, a legally approved agency.
Yes, and it's a constant, as Paul was saying, it's constant harassment. That they've got things like, you know, they put them up in hotels to do their jobs. And then you have like left-wing people that work for the hotel that then leak which hotel it is that they're staying at. And then you get protests all night outside these hotels. I don't know what these people do for a living. I don't know if they're retired or, well, they're apparently professional poets. You've got them constantly being spat at, people throwing snowballs at them, people shouting at them, people saying nasty things to them, and they're just doing their job, and it's their legal mandate, as you say, Lipton, to arrest people that are illegally in the country, to enforce federal law. And they are treated in this way. So that's the first problem.
Yep. One of the funny things, Ed, is I've seen some of the protesters demand that the local law enforcement do something about ICE. So these are people who believe in defund the police. We don't believe in law and order. We believe in autonomous zones. But when one of our number gets killed because of their stupidity, we demand that some law enforcement agency helps us out.
It's just really unfortunate that America won't deport dysfunctional characters.
Well, you can't deport American citizens.
That's the point. It's unfortunate. We can't get rid of liberal women.
No, or just idiots. you can't get rid of idiots. Stupid
you could do
idiots.
You could do an exchange scheme with Hebden Bridge. Sorry, there'll be North American viewers who aren't familiar with Hebden Bridge.
But tell them what it is.
It's basically Valhalla for lesbians, isn't it? Yeah.
But isn't that this lady? She was a lesbian, right?
Yes,
she was.
Well done, Lipton. You're on point. Well done.
She was bi. The thing I found quite interesting.
She was X straight, and she was she was a born again lesbian.
Is that what you can be? I don't think so. I think she was a femme.
But Ed, she is your typical borderline narcissistic white female liberal. You speak about people like her in your book.
I do. And there's something that people aren't bothering to look at, but I'm going to write an article tomorrow for Occidental Observer where I will look at it, which is that she was used to be a fundamentalist Christian.
Oh.
And no one has bothered to pick up on this very important fact about the
nature. Why is that important, Ed?
Because it's disturbed identity. She's gone from one extreme, being a fundamentalist Christian, to the other extreme, being left-wing and woke and lesbian and whatever, right?
And she was a fundamentalist Christian, Ed, she's going to be more morally righteous.
She's got that wrong with fundamentalist Christianity.
No, but she's got that mindset that she needs to feel morally superior.
Jesus!
No. But I'm not having a go at all people that are evangelical Christians here. I'm only having a go at the ones that used to be evangelical Christians and then became extreme atheists. And it's a real problem that they demand certainty. They demand a black and white identity. They demand that they are morally superior, whatever. And she was so into it. So the church that she was involved in was the First Presbyterian Church, Colorado Springs. Okay, this is a conservative church. It is an anti-gay church. It is an everything that she's not now church. And when she was a late teenager, she went as a missionary, as like on a mission to Northern Ireland. which is pretty bloody religious, right?
And she was involved... that's enough to addle anyone's brain, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, but she was, again, she was involved in the church. First
coming
Presbyterian.
Over here.
Aye, a Christian. Aye, coming over here. You're icy
scissoring.
Now.
Scissoring. Well, our
well,
scissors.
There you come here and scissor. And Coleraine. But that's where she was, by the way, Coleraine. As I understand it, I have to check. I think it was Coleraine. So she's a fundamentalist Christian. And then obviously that's what her parents are, this Donna Granger, and I don't know what her dad's name is. And then she marries this guy, and for some reason we can't work out what his name is. And the thing I think is quite interesting is that her children, she's got a six-year-old son, and she's got a child of 15, I think it's a daughter of 15, and a daughter of 12. And they live with the father. And, okay, look, many of you out there are divorced, whatever, but as a rule, the mother gets custody, yes?
Yes.
Right, so I'm wondering...
Unless she's what, caught feeding pigeons.
Unless she's... Right, so I'm wondering, the father of these children will not give his name to protect his own, to protect his kids, which is fair enough. But I mean, I'm interested to know, there would have been a custody battle, presumably, when they got divorced, and it would have been decided that the kids should live with the father. So, why?
She's unstable, Ed.
Of course she is, yeah.
Can I make a slightly tangential point that I do think's relevant, Ed? Would you, because I'm of the mind, for example, that mountaineering, there shouldn't be mountain rescue units. If you want to do something dangerous, why... through your selfishness put other people's lives at risk as they have to go and rescue you because you've got atrocious equipment or you've gone during bad weather. For once, I'm with you, Ed, on the Darwinism. You know, in Darwinian times, the most stupid in society were winnowed out, and we've stopped the winnowing process, and hence we've got all these problems.
Exactly. The Earl of Bute, who was Prime Minister from 1763 to 1764, correct me if I'm wrong, was so into naturalism and, you know, finding weird new plants and stuff like that, that he saw beyond the cliff edge an interesting example of an orchid or something that he was fascinated by. And so he took the insane risk of sort of climbing down that cliff edge a bit to get that orchid, and then he fell off the cliff.
Well, that reminds me. Sorry, but that is Darwinism meeting God. You know, most Darwinists don't believe in God. But every time you occasionally read of these stories of people taking selfies from dangerous places and falling off and dying, that's both Darwinian and godly retribution.
Yeah, whenever I see any of those stories online, Paul, I literally laugh. Because why would you take such a stupid risk? No, those people, they're not adventurous. There are some individuals, they will climb a mountain. What is that sport called with the helicopter where you jump out of the plane? Bungee? What's the name of it?
Parachuting.
Yeah, parachuting. So some people are adventurous. Some people like it when life is fun. But these influencers, they're just irrelevant and annoying. So I don't really pity
Why would you deliberately choose to do something extremely dangerous? I had a friend at university, and she decided that she would go skydiving. Now, I would not do that. I'm not going to throw myself out of a bloody helicopter or an aeroplane. That's insane. But she did. And not only did she do it, but she didn't. She was so excited and overjoyed at her landmark event in her life of skydiving, that she wasn't concentrating on the instructions of the man with the little, because there was a little speaker in her ear telling her what to do, right? But move this way. And she didn't do what she was told. And so she landed in a field full of cows.
Good. Well, she lived.
And thank God, that is such a dangerous thing to do, to land in a field full of cows. Yeah, if you do
I have sympathy for those, because some people like it when life is adventurous. They like to explore, and nothing is wrong with that. But influencers are just useless people. They're literally engaging in a risky activity to get likes.
But as Paul was saying earlier, there's almost a sense in which, because bad things have decreasingly happened to us, and they've decreasingly happened to us slowly and in a subtle way, over many, many, many years, particularly over the last sort of 50 or 60 years, particularly since the war, I suppose, then we just don't understand anymore the seriousness of our own actions and what they can lead to. And so you get people just taking what any person 70 years ago would say, this is an insanely stupid thing to do. Like, I don't want to blame people. I don't want to victim blame. But I hear of cases of like women walking alone in a park at night and they get sexually assaulted. Right. That's terrible and it shouldn't happen and it's awful. OK. But I remember in the 90s, in a very safe and middle class part of London, women refusing to walk home on their own because, you know, you just don't do that because there could be some weirdo. You don't do that. And then we drop that idea. Everything will be fine. And then you get these terrible consequences. You know, there was a park in Aberdeen, for example. I forget the name of it. Pittodrie or something. That you just didn't walk through at night. You didn't. Everybody knew that's where the junkies go at night. So you don't go there at night. Whereas now, yeah, I can imagine people would go there and film them with their GoPros and then be surprised if they get robbed or beaten up or stabbed. And it's a really weird, it's a change as a, you know, call me a boomer. I'm not a boomer. I'm obviously, I'm Generation X. But it doesn't make any sense, does it, Paul?
No, it doesn't. But I can see Lipton. I can read Lipton's face in the dark, and I think he's sneering at you, Ed.
He's sneering.
He's sneering at you.
Sneering.
Stop sneering, Lipton.
Lipton, can you just smile so I can see you?
I'm smiling.
No. That's definitely a black screen. anyway, so there's that question, and I don't. I mean, the guy that's the husband of these kids, obviously, it's awful for him. And, but he's, I think he's obviously undergone a fundamental.
The father of the kids, not the husband.
Anyway, let's read her poem. Let's read her poem on learning to dissect fetal pigs. So she went to university late, which I always find rather suspicious. So she was born in 1988 and she graduated in 2020. So this makes her 32 when she graduated with an undergraduate degree. So I always find that a bit odd. And it's consistent with mental breakdown and things like that to go to university. Yeah, you should go to university at 18 like normal people. But anyway, on learning to dissect a fetal pig, she won an award for this. I want back my rocking chairs, solipsist sunsets and coastal jungle sounds that are tercets from cicadas and pentameter from the hairy legs of cockroaches. I've donated Bibles to thrift stores, mashed them in plastic trash bags with an acidic Himalayan salt lamp, the post-baptism Bibles, the ones plucked from street corners from the meaty hands of zealots, the dumbed-down, easy-to-read, parasitic kind. Remember more the slick rubber smell of high-gloss biology textbook pictures? They burned the hairs inside my nostrils, and salt and ink that rubbed off on my palms. Under clippings of the moon at 2:45 a.m., I study and repeat ribosome, endoplastic, lactic acid, stamen. At the hop on the corner of Powers and Stetson Hills, I repeated and scribbled until it picked its way and stagnated somewhere I can't point to anymore. Maybe my gut? Maybe there in between my pancreas and large intestine in the piddly brook of my soul. It's the ruler by which I reduce all things now, hard-edged and splintering from knowledge that used to sit and cloth against fevered forehead. Can I let them both be, this fickle faith and this college science that heckles from the back of the classroom? Now I can't believe that the Bible and Quran and Bhagavad Gita are sliding long hairs behind my ear like mum used to and exhaling from their mouths make room for wonder. All my understanding dribbles down the chin into the chest and is summarised as life is merely to ovum and sperm and where those two meet and how often and how well and what dies there.
It's quite emotional, Ed. I think in Minnesota we pronounce it cicadas.
That is fucking deep. Mm. That is that is not just using big words at all.
Do you think the ICE officer was the president of a local poetry appreciation society?
I think that was it. He was the president. He was the president of a local society of like being good at writing poems, and he just saw red. He couldn't bear it.
No, he was a Dylan Thomas aficionado, and just he lost it.
He was an aficionado of people that are good at writing poetry.
What does resident poet think of that?
Resident poet often only watches for the first half and then... He slopes off. That's why he wasn't there to moderate last week. Oh, no, he wasn't moderated last week. I just made him one. But yeah, I mean, look, that as far as I'm concerned, that is... If I were to do a joke, like a pastiche of how bad...
Imitating. You people keep using these words. Imitating.
Fickle. Like just chuck in any word you like. That's
well, I was moved by she took things from her personal direct experience, like hairy legs.
Yeah, and cockroaches.
That was code. In Hebden Bridge, there are lots of hairy legs.
But what she did was that she highlighted her childhood, which was Christian. Okay, and they're making out now in the Guardian article, for example, about her that she's not a Christian. She's a person that's completely rejected Christianity, and that poem is a rejection of it, isn't it? I mean, she's saying, "Oh, I used to give out Bibles and stuff, and wasn't I stupid? And now I realise that life is just a sperm and egg, and it has no meaning." And that's that. That's what that's about. That's a poem about a conversion from being a Christian, which she was, to being a nihilist, which she is now. That's what it's about.
It's really atheism is filtering into the mass society. So atheists are no longer smart people. That's what's in your book, and I agree.
Well, it's not my book. I mean, that's the data. We've got data on this.
Yeah. Any idiot can call himself an atheist today.
I disagree on the nihilism. If it was nihilistic, that would be better. I think it's more to your point that she switched fundamentalist leanings to a different outlook. So it's not nihilistic. She's involved in an active, let's make sexual assaulters and muggers and illegal immigrants who are doing various criminal things and the authorities are trying to deport. Let's make America great again with these people who shouldn't be there. And that is a crusade, a bizarre Beelzebubic crusade she's involved in. I do think it's just the flip side of her fundamentalist Christianity.
It is. That's exactly what it is. I shall do an article about it tomorrow. I may well do a video about it as well. No one's talked about it. I can't believe it's so obvious to me. And there's other people as well that I find on the, what do you want to call it? You know, the far right, based right, the purple, the blue, the red pill right, whatever. And you see exactly the same thing. And they go from being absolutely left-wing to being absolutely right-wing, or vice versa. And there's no nuance and no self-awareness, because self-awareness would be frightening.
Has there ever been a study of mental derangement and left-wing political views and the hirsuteness of bipedal women?
I'm afraid not, but it's a way of it's a bit like this, you know, this poison dart frog thing that you, this idea that you, if you don't like yourself and you think you're ugly, then you make yourself even more ugly so you can say, oh, I've chosen to do this, I have control over this. So a woman that feels like that will do things like dye her hair purple or shave half her head off or whatever. So she feels she has a sense of control over her internal belief, which is often perhaps correct, but sometimes it's not correct, that she is ugly. She feels bad about herself, and the whole not shaving your legs, and it's a deliberate way. It's social signaling. Look, I'm so committed to the feminist cause, I don't shave my legs. But also, it's taking control over this feeling that they have about themselves. It's very sad.
What's the significance of the fact that Lipton does shave his legs? Go on, Lipton, prove me wrong. Show us your legs. Go on.
No, my legs are not hairy and I don't shave them, but they're okay.
Lipton, you know how straight-haired people have curly pubes?
Okay.
Japan, where people have straight pubes.
Okay then.
I've always wondered that. Like, curly-haired people have straight... And that's the only conclusion I can come to, that curly-haired people have straight pubes.
Oh, Ed. I interviewed Edward Miller, but he was not recorded. It wasn't recorded in at all, but we spoke last week.
Why didn't you record it? It would have been
brilliant. He's not interested. He didn't want it to be recorded. And his voice is okay. His voice is quite okay.
I think about the reason why there's a correlation.
He does not speak like that.
He's not Welsh.
He's not Welsh. No,
Let me tell you what's interesting.
Won't be like this, you know.
That's an Indian one.
No, the Indian one won't be like this. Get it right.
That's Afghani.
My turn to speak. So let me tell you what was really interesting. So I was asking him about his research. Then I started to talk to him about his family, and his wife was at the hall. She wasn't in the interview, obviously, but she could listen to the interview, and she said, okay, no more. Like, he said, no more talking about family. So we ended the interview somewhere because I kept questioning him. I was like, what about your father? What about your siblings? And his wife said, no family.
he sounds a bit... I like Ed Miller. He's a good bloke.
So I like him, but yeah. So he was talking quite a bit, and his wife said no family. He was telling about his father and his mother, and his wife said no family.
So where are you going to publish this non-recorded interview, Lipton?
I didn't record it any at all.
But where are you going to publish it?
It won't be published.
It wasn't really an interview then, was it? It was just a chat.
Yes. Because he didn't want to do a recorded interview.
It's a shame because I think his voice should, you know, he's a very elderly man, and I think his voice, it's so extraordinary. It's such a an old-fashioned accent. It's kind of like a Virginia brogue almost. That it would be good if his accent was recorded.
No, I don't think he's away from Lloyd.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, we've got a couple of questions. The first is from Melkor54 from Canada, where I should be going in June. The UK and Canada need armed ICE officers. We are overrun. Well, they are armed, aren't they? The UK and Canada. Oh, I see what you mean. We do. You're quite right. Although, yes, no, I just agree with you. And the Melkor also says Christianity isn't extreme; it's truth.
Jesus,
right? I'm not. No, right?
Oh, come on, Ed. You've got daddy issues with God. We know this.
I do wonder, actually, if like. What is borderline personality disorder, which we were discussing earlier and in relation to this Rene bird and whatever, right? It involves having an identity which is completely enmeshed with somebody else. So somebody else allows you to, regulates your emotions for you, and you idealize.
Isn't it called being married?
Yeah, that's true. Because the kind of woman that you'd marry, you'd be quite selective, and you'd absolutely make sure you wouldn't marry a BPD kind of woman. You'd never do that.
What about the ladies in my basement?
Yeah, the ladies that you use as mistresses, yeah, they're going to be crazy. Fine. Partly because they are crazy and thus get to know you, and partly because you make them crazy because of the way in which you talk to them in your basement. But the women that you actually marry. Those people are normally the marriage material, wife material is not, you know, crazy material, is it? There's the hot crazy matrix, that whole debate there. I think that the Christianity is truth. What does that even mean? I mean, there are things that contradict other things. I don't understand what that means. Christianity is truth. I can't.
Someone in the comments is basement phobic. I thought our society had grown and become more tolerant.
I thought that since that Austrian guy, we'd become more tolerant of weirdos that put people in basements, but obviously not. No. So I never forget when I was a kid, I was about 8 or 7, and I went to the video shop in Winchester with my grandparents. I was staying with my grandparents. My parents had gone to a Van Morrison concert or something. and they put me with my grandparents. And my grandparents had no comprehension of things like video ratings and what they meant, right? And so we were just looking at the video shop. My grandfather goes, "Oh, this looks interesting." And there was this video. It was this film called "I Think My Name Is Stephen." I don't know if you've heard of it, but it was about this little boy that gets abducted by this, you know, mental, and is kept by him for years and years and years, and he's just called, you know, idiot, shit, whatever. So, and eventually, when he's rescued, they ask him his name, and he says, "I think my name is Stephen." And my grandfather just put this on. It's like, yeah, this works. It's quite good. I think my name is Stephen. That could be interesting. And so I was. So I sat there, watched this, you know, this basically this horrible film. It wasn't even a horror film. It was a film about the abuse of this boy who's kept in this cellar, and, you know.
Ed, I really admire your chutzpah, because you're talking about this and I'm making jokes, but the people in the chat don't realise that Lipton actually is in a basement.
Lipton is out in a basement in rural Wales. and I think
he's in Oulu.
No, he's not in Oulu. No,
we have a timeshare. He has some time in your basement, some time in mine.
Yeah, this is the transport again between basement. I'm in my basement now, and I can see. Yeah, we've got this room in the basement that hasn't been developed, so it's just a room with junk. So I could keep Lipton in there. Sometimes the cats go in there. But I could keep it in that room. The only problem is it looks out onto the back garden, which is also where essentially the front door is. So it could be that some people would come in. Yeah. You know, Joe,
when are you coming to England so we can give a lecture? I want to give a lecture.
March first week of March, I'm coming to England.
Really?
Yeah.
I want us to give a lecture at Oxford. The three of us.
I'm going to Oxford.
Really? What?
Yeah, I've been invited to give a lecture at Oxford University.
Really? See,
not by the university, but by a society there.
Really? That's interesting. Yes.
And so I'm gonna give a lecture in Oxford. Yeah, that's the plan.
How long the Kimono Society has been running?
The Oxford God, We're Gay Society has been running for the Oxford Super Gay Society.
Ooh, I can't believe this. This is big news, really big news. You should go, Paul. We should all go.
A day trip to Oxford.
The Oxford Super, Super, Super LGBTQ Society.
No, we should all go. Ed, let Ed talk about whatever, and I will talk about reparations and why Britain shouldn't pay it.
We're thinking about it. I can ask them.
Yeah, where Britain should pay reparations.
I think they mainly want me, though.
But, I have so many articles on reparations. It's not funny.
It's not funny. No, it's very serious.
Yeah, my lot of articles. It's not funny.
I wrote a funny article once for a magazine called The Chap. Otherwise, I haven't written any funny articles. I don't really. I write serious.
Yeah, and then a new article.
Did this journal, inverted commas, have the picture of a cowboy in chaps for the article you wrote?
No, because it was about Marshall Mannerheim. It was about how Marshall Mannerheim was a chap.
Was he a cowboy?
No, he was president. He was regent of Finland, president of Finland. He was the guy that won like the winter, the Civil War and the Winter War, Continuation War, whatever. That guy, him. And he's a very interesting guy. And then he got a bit pissed off with being a politician. So he decided to go and buy a cafe and just run a cafe. And that's what he did. Having been regent of Finland, he ran a cafe for a bit. And then the Russians invaded. And they came to his cafe in 1944 and said, "Please, can you stop running a cafe and help us defeat the Russians?" This is true. And it's in the documentary that Callum, you know, Callum, as in Britannica, that guy, we did a documentary about it. We went to the cafe. And it's this cafe on like the he was living on near the cafe in a sort of a stately home, and the cafe was a speakeasy, so because they banned alcohol in Finland, there was prohibition in Finland, and so he was so pissed off with the noise from this speakeasy that he just bought it, and then ran a cafe.
I can relate to this because I have an alter ego and I cook. I am called Fat Eric in my kitchen. And I'm an imaginary chef in a diner. And I put, like my, string, I put my string vest on. And I just throw food around.
This is BPD, Paul. This is Lipton.
Yes.
We have 1,800 viewers, which, considering the change in our viewer dynamics, is quite good.
Yeah, that's really good.
Did it went up from 1,400 Lipton since your picture went?
It did. It is something about Lipton not being there has meant there's a lot more. There's literally hundreds more people that want to watch. They want to watch me, Paul, and a black oblong. That's what they want to watch.
Yes.
Yeah, but when that black oblong is revealed to be a human, then the it upsets them. They like the idea of a
We've got to turn this into a regular thing, Ed. What's in the black box, Ed?
In the black box today, there is, and then we, you know, people talking about slavery, or whatever we get in the black box. Right? Have we? We've got 5 minutes left.
I really like that song, Black Box. Ride on Time. Oh. Yeah, but she didn't actually sing it. But one of my most erotic experiences in life, I'll share this with you because no one's watching. She was on Top of the Pops, but she wasn't the actual singer. Apparently, it was a very large Anne Widdecombe-sized lady did the singing. But there was this gorgeous black woman who was a brilliant dancer, and she wore a body-length catsuit and a chainmail thong. And oh, I remember in those days, the Top of the Pops cameraman was a right pervert. So he went right round the back of the stage. Oh, it was brilliant. Happy memories.
About, what, 92, 93?
Yeah, it was back in the day, yeah.
Yeah. I remember there was Right on Time, and there was This Is the Something of the Night.
Right on Time!
You can't see me.
Right on Time. I always thought it was Right on Time. Ride on Time. Yeah, I had that problem when I was a kid. My parents had a Tracy Chapman album, a Tracy Chapman tape, and they would play it in the car. And
that's got a rude line in it. Have you heard it? I'm gonna 9-inch cock. She sings that song. She does. Listen to it.
Car.
No, but she actually goes, I'm gonna 9-inch cock. That's how she sings it.
Americans don't have the word cock. They say like dick.
Well. I want the chat to adjudicate. I think she sings. I'm gonna 9-inch car.
I'm just gonna run. Talking about a revolution. Oh no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, I'll be standing in the welfare line.
It's descended into pub singer.
Of those armies of salvation. Spending time in the something like yellow overlines. Yeah, spreading with emotion. Oh, finally, there's starting to turn. Talking about revolution. It's finally the something is starting to turn. So the revolution.
You know, one of my favorite songs of all time is Tiffany. I think we're alone now. I almost got into a fight. Did I tell you this in America? Because they were defending Kylie. And I said that Tiffany, I Think We're Alone Now, was a Sartrean existential classic. And they said, no, Kylie is better. And it almost descended into fisticuffs.
Fisticuffs. Mm. That reminds me of Oliver. What? Fisticuffs? I go anywhere for you, dear. Anywhere. To Timbuktu. Anywhere. Paint your face bright blue. Anywhere.
Are there any requests in the chat for Ed to sing a song?
And back again, I do anything for you. Yeah, we've stuck to the topic. We've been serious.
I am dancing. Nobody can.
Lipton's doing his Trump dance.
Yeah, I'm dancing.
Are you dancing, Lipton?
Yes, young man.
What's this thing about how JD Vance used to be really fat? They keep going.
Exactly. He was fat.
You do a good version of Firestarter, Ed. I can see you. With your hair slicked back.
Someone's saying do Iron Maiden, Ed, but I'm trying to think about Near to the east, in a part of ancient Greece, in an ancient land called Macedonia, there was born a son to Philip of Macedon. His name was Alexander. At the age of 19, he became the Macedon king and swore to defeat all of Asia Minor. On the Aegean Sea at 334 BC, he utterly beat the army of Persia, Alexander the Great. His name struck fear into hearts of men. Alexander the Great came a god among mortal men.
You make it sound like Gilbert and Sullivan.
Yeah, you should. I like that idea of a Gilbert, like in the same way that Samar.
That was AC/DC meets Gilbert and Sullivan.
Interestingly, one of the first things I bought with my own money was Can I Play With Madness by Iron Maiden, but the second thing was the Blow Up Your Video album by AC/DC. And then it was all weird and buggered, and we had to take it back and exchange it for another one. But yeah, I was like, I liked Iron Maiden and AC/DC. Him with the skull cap on, Geordie guy, you know, AC/DC. I liked it. I liked the old AC/DC. For some reason, I thought they were Australian, but they weren't. Although they were English. But
are you going to go next week? Will you listen to the Tracy Chapman song and tell me I'm wrong?
So it was Fast Car.
Yeah,
it's Fast Car, isn't it? You're talking about. Yeah. I've got to make a religion. I'm going to be somewhere. I'm going to make some money.
I've got a 9-inch gang.
From the country into the city. Da, 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 da. Okay, Fast Car. If you're watching Tracy Chapman, which you probably are, both Paul and I are fans of yours. I particularly, what's that one, that really beautiful one? She goes, ooh, ooh, do, 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 do. Promise, it's called Promise. It's on a later album from the one where it's kind of like sort of sepia coloured, and it's a different album, it's called Promise. Could you?
For someone who's obviously listened to a lot of music, Ed, you are profoundly tone deaf.
Oh, that is bollocks. I got into my school choir and you had to audition. And it was a bit complicated because I went through puberty.
I'd love
early
to know what the audition involved. And it wasn't
singing.
It wasn't singing.
What is it involved? Singing and making
behind
my music
the choir teacher, stall.
Music teacher. No, it was a Catholic school, as you know.
Look, that's how you got into the choir, and we all know how you got your driving license. There's a pattern in your life. There's
good
a pattern.
Driving by being good at operating a motor vehicle, particularly in snowy.
Operating
conditions.
A gear stick.
No, because it's an automatic. Right. So with that said, I would like to thank you all for tuning in, and we will all see you next week, where we will return to our very sensible discussions of topical events. And tally ho and goodbye.
Goodbye.